Good morning, everyone. Before we turn to the cases that are before us this morning, we have, as a panel, some happy business to attend to. And that business comes to us in the form of a motion from Judge Clevenger. So I will now turn the podium over to him so we can make that motion.
As you all know, the court can't function without members of the bar. And we always are happy to see the size of our bar enlarged, especially when we are enlarged by the admission of truly qualified people. Therefore, I move the admission of Tara D. Elliott, who is a member of the bar in good standing of the highest courts of the state of Delaware and the District of Columbia. I have knowledge of her credentials, and I'm satisfied that she possesses the necessary qualifications. As Ms. Elliott is my law clerk, I believe I should recuse myself from voting on this motion because obviously I would have my thumb on the scale.
I'll second that.
The motion is happily granted. Zelle, if you could step forward.
Please raise your right hand. You solemnly swear that you will comport yourself as an attorney and counsel of this court, uprightly and according to law, and that you will support the Constitution of the United States of America.
Okay.
Congratulations, and welcome to the Bar of the United States Court of Appeals.
Zelle, welcome to the Bar of the Court. You've already been, I know, a great assistance during your clerkship to Judge Clevenger and also to other judges working with our clerk, so we profited from your talents and abilities indirectly. Welcome to the Bar of the Court. We look forward to seeing you before us.
Thank you, Your Honor.
We will now turn to the cases before us today. Before doing that, I would just note for the record, we have a total of six cases before the panel this morning. Two of these cases are being submitted on the briefs without oral argument. I will just note those two cases for the record. The first one is number 2008-3009, Ayers versus the Department of Homeland Security. And the second one is number 2008-3132, Nobles versus the Office of Personnel Management. Again, those two cases are being submitted on the briefs without oral argument. The first case in which we'll hear oral argument this morning is number 2007-1520, Portfolio Technologies versus the International Trade Commission. And preliminarily, I understand that there are some exhibits. Now, there was a motion filed earlier to have visual aids be used at oral argument, and the court denied that motion to the extent that it involved visual aids which were not part of the record before the International Trade Commission. I'm sure counsel for the parties are aware of our ruling. We have not had a chance to examine this material until it was presented to us just now. Are the parties in agreement on this material? Or is there some question?
Your Honor, may I explain?
Yes, this is before we start. Yes, Mr. Beam and Mr. Reese?
Yes, sir.
You'll have a chance to respond if there's any need to.
The packet that we gave you this morning consists of materials that are out of the appendix and have appendix pages at the bottom, with the exception of the second page after the cover, which is page 11 of our principal brief.
Okay, it has this page here, 686, okay.
Yes, sir. The request with regard to exhibits that we mentioned in our letter with regard to visual aids involved particularly physical exhibits, JPX 1 through JPX 10. And those are the ones that were referred to in the motion. Those were used at trial. We have done everything that we can to get those before the court, as I believe your honors know. And yesterday, when I got a copy of the court's order concerning visual aids,
yes.
I placed phone calls and left messages for two of the counsel for the International Trade Commission, asking them to bring those original exhibits with them. Mr. Reese for the commission has acknowledged receiving my message. I have not heard from him with regard to whether he has brought those exhibits with him or not.
This is like a district court proceeding, ruling on evidence. Well, any certainly, Mr. Dean, Mr. Reese, do you have any problems with this item?
Your Honor, understanding that it's, as Mr. Beam represented, it comes right out of the appendix. I wouldn't have an objection, except that we would all appreciate that it's obviously just a few pages of whatever document comes from.
All right, that's fine. Okay, this will be available for use during oral argument to the extent Mr. Beam or other counsel wishes to refer to it. Now, the second item, the physical exhibits that Mr. Beam referred to, again, if there are physical exhibits that were part of the record, do you want to use them?
Well, Your Honor, I would very much like to use the actual exhibits that were moved into evidence at the International Trade Commission, but those are in the possession of the International Trade Commission, and they're only here if they brought them. Now, and perhaps we should hear from them on that. I have with me the actual products. Exactly the same
products. Necessary? I mean, you have visual depictions, correct?
Your Honor, I do not intend to use the physical exhibits during my principal argument. They were here. The intention was only to the extent
that...
Leave
them around in case we had an e-board?
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
Can I ask a further question? It has to do, because I noticed, for example, the material that you just gave us, page from your brief, page 11, is marked confidential. The matters that are coming from the exhibits are not marked, from the record are not marked confidential, but the record itself is marked. The brief of the International Trade Commission is not marked confidential. All the other briefs are. How much of this is confidential? I mean, we always have this problem with cases from the commission.
Right? Your Honor,
To the extent that anything that's in the brief of the trade of the commission is not marked confidential, then we assume that for your concern, because it duplicates a lot of factual material that's in your brief, it is marked confidential.
I don't believe that anything in any of the briefs, as far as I know, is confidential. The PTIs...
What about the decision below? The initial decision of the commission, which was replaced by another decision, the initial decision was released to the public, if you will, by saying that it was no longer privileged.
That is the only difference, Your Honor, between the blue confidential brief and the blue non-confidential brief is... the extent of the commission's opinion.
Is the commission's opinion still considered confidential by you?
There are.
How do we write an opinion in which we describe what the commission did? We have, blanks in our opinion?
As far as I'm concerned, Your Honor, the only things that are in there and that are confidential are economic, and because of economic prong, which was found by the commission, that issue is not on appeal. As far as I'm concerned, none of the technical evidence, none of what we're going to be talking about here today is confidential.
Do we know how the intervener feels on that? I'm sorry.
It's good to get these houses.
We've got a big audience here. You know, I always worry if I start asking questions, and I ask a question with bang, right in the heart of what everybody agrees is confidential, then I put my foot in it. What's the answer?
Good morning, Your Honors. I'm James Schiller. I represent Church in Hawaii. And from our perspective, nothing is confidential.
I think that's itself to get these matters out of the way. One final thing I notice, I see that counsel on the appellee side is splitting their time, 8 minutes and 7 minutes for main argument. Is that correct?
Yes, 8 minutes for the ITC and 7 for the intervener.
Okay, fine. I just, I'm speaking on behalf of myself and my fellow members of the panel. When counsel does that, it's always helpful to the extent you can to avoid duplication in your arguments. It makes for better flow. All right, with those matters out of the way, we will proceed. Mr. Bean, you can start your argument whenever you're ready. I see you reserved 3 minutes for rebuttal, correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay, go ahead whenever you're ready.
Your Honors, with me this morning are Paul Kozacki, Jerome Weitzel, and John Linzer, all of whom are on the brief. May it please the Court. The claimed invention is a prophylactic.
Right.
It has a second pouch that rubs against the gland's penis. There are two parts of the invention. There's the first pouch, which resembles a standard straight wall condom, and there is a second pouch that sticks out from the first pouch. In the
mistake, sir, is it an error in claim construction? Is it an error in understanding the way in which the accused device is operated? What are we talking about? And I think the panel understand
yes, sir.
What we read the patent when we looked at all pictures.
Yes, sir.
What's the reversible error?
The reversible error is the additional construction that the commission did in its final opinion. There is no dispute between the parties as to the construction that the commission did in its first opinion.
Well, let's break that in. If there was a further construction of the claim by the commission, you're not arguing that the commission lacked the power to do that, right?
I'm not arguing that.
And when it goes up to the commission, they take the case first.
That's so correct,
what,
sir.
What aspect, which limitation in the claim was misconstrued, and if so, why?
Your Honor, that goes right to the heart of the question here.
That's why I asked.
The limitations that the commission applied in its final opinion are not in Claim 1. They're not in any of the asserted claims except arguably Claim 18. I would refer you, Yes, sir, exactly. At A14 of the commission's final opinion, about two-thirds of the way down is where the error begins. I'd like to...
if you could give us the text.
Just the text on that particular page.
I'm sorry, the text?
Read the text on
yes.
that particular page.
This is what the commission says. We agree with C&D and MedTech that this is a misapplication of the construction of elongated tubular portion adopted by the commission. It continues. The valleys of the twisted pleasure, are you with me in the middle of this long paragraph? The valleys of the twisted pleasure are not part of the tubular portion of the condom. There is nothing in the valleys of the spiral region that is tubular in shape under an ordinary reading of the claim terms. There is nothing like a circumference in the valleys of the spiral region.
Sounds like a fact finding.
Well,
you're looking at an accused device, right?
It does sound like a fact finding. And this is in the part where they're talking about infringement. It's after the part of the opinion where they're talking about claim construction. Our complaint, if you will, with this part of the opinion is that there are no valleys in Claim 1. There are no valleys in any of the claims. There are no valleys in the commission's original construction.
But is that what the commission is saying, that they're looking for a valley as a matter of claim, or they're saying there's nothing like a circumference?
Well, they say that there's no circumference in the valleys.
Why now, the requirement of a circumference emanates from the claim language, doesn't it?
Yes, sir. Well,
if they're looking for a circumference, that's an okay thing for them to be doing, because if the claim language requires a circumference, They got fined one in order to find that limitation met, right?
That's correct, Your Honor, and the commission did find the circumference. The only circumference that is mentioned in Claim 1. The only circumference that's mentioned in any of the claims. What they did here is they added an additional limitation that there be a circumference in the valleys. And there are two parts of claim construction error in that. One is to impose a requirement of valleys into Claim 1 and the other claims. The other is to require, in addition to a circumference in the first pouch, which the commission found, to require that there be a circumference in the valleys, as they called it. Your Honor, it might be helpful to refer to the figures. If I could refer you to the first page after the cover sheet in these materials that I've handed out to you, and look particularly at the figures. Excuse me. The condom, as I mentioned, has a first pouch. That first pouch is defined to include the open end and the closed end, and to have a generally constant diameter. It is a tubular portion, and the phrase elongated tubular portion and first pouch are used interchangeably in this case. The novelty of this claimed invention is that there is a second pouch having an entrance that allows the inner surface of the second pouch to move against the gland's penis. And it is undisputed, Your Honor, that the inner surface of what the interveners call spirals moves against the gland's penis.
And there needs to be, correct me if I'm wrong, in all the claims in suit, they're asserted claims in suit, there needs to be an entrance, right, from the first pouch to the second pouch.
That's correct, Your Honor.
And the commission, again, correct me if I'm wrong, sir, found, as a matter of fact, that there was no entrance.
That's exactly right.
Any of the accused.
That was their finding, and that was erroneous because of the additional.
Even if they were wrong on this circumference issue you and I were talking about a moment ago, if they were right on the entrance issue, you'd still have a problem, correct?
That's true.
You'd have to meet every limitation.
Yes, that's true.
But maybe, because there were times just running on this, maybe you could explain why the commission, or could try to convince me why the commission was wrong when it said, As entrance is defined, or as they defined it for claim interpretation purposes, that limitation was missing in the accused home. Wherein was the commission wrong in that fact finding?
Where they made the fact finding ultimately was at page A17, and all the claim construction that we're complaining about is concentrated between pages A14 and A19. At page A17, about halfway down, at the end of the long paragraph that continues from the previous page, the commission states that it does not rely on non-infringement for any failure to find a elongated tubular portion, generally constant diameter, or first pouch having a circumference. That is the circumference that I mentioned is the only circumference in the claim. The commission continues. However, having found that the valleys of the spiral region of the twisted pleasure do not meet the definition of elongated tubular portion, we find that as a result, the limitation of an entrance or movement through it is not met.
And they're blending the circumference issue and the entrance issue.
Yes, sir. And the faulty premise that explains the whole error here, the faulty premise of claim construction, is that a first pouch having a circumference means a first pouch having a constant circular circumference of membrane at every cross section from the open end of the condom to the closed end of the condom.
So what's the second pouch in the accused condom?
If you would turn, Your Honor, to the first color page in the handout materials, this is figure D. It's at A4731. And the next sequence of color figures in here is A4731 through 4743. Those show the in spiral the Twisted Pleasure, those are the two accused products, and the Pleasure Plus, which is my client's product that is conceded to practice the patent claims. Just for the sake of completeness, the last two figures in this packet are exactly what the interveners presented to the commission as RDX1 and RDX2.
What figures are those?
There's no label on these, Your Honor, but the last two figures in the packet, the appendix. 4820 and 4824. Yes, sir.
RDX1 and 2.
Yes, sir.
But isn't the finding that the valley part of the second valley pouch and not part of the first pouch and the boundary between the first and the second pouch, isn't that really a factual determination by the commission? Not a determination on claim construction?
It depends entirely on claim construction, Your Honor, because the only way the commission was able to get there was to require that in this region where the second pouch is, that that be a tube. That was their faulty premise. And a tube has a circumference of material. A tube has a diameter that's measurable all the way around that circle that they insist must be present.
But could it be the entrance of the pouch itself which was circumferential? Is that what they're talking about?
Your Honor, what they're focusing on is the way that the commission defined elongated tubular portion in its first opinion, with which we agree, is that the elongated tubular portion is that which is everything except the second pouches. So their argument is, and they're very fond, the interveners, of cutting up condoms. So everything that they've presented, they haven't presented anything that even shows what they call the spirals in the products. Instead, they've cut them out, and then they say if you cut out the second pouch, there isn't enough left of the first pouch or elongated tubular portion to define a continuous circumference, a circle of material.
Now, both of those exhibits of 4820 and 4824 are exhibits of the intervener.
These are from their exhibits of the intervener. This is what they presented to the commission as their exhibits. They have since explained to this court that they're actually part of larger exhibits, RDX1 and RDX2, which are in the appendix, and I'm sure they will tell you about. Now, my point, and I think this is important, is even under RDX1 and RDX2, there is infringement. If you will turn to those at 4820 in the Twisted Pleasure, what the interveners have left here is the straight shaft, the straight wall shaft portion of the condom and the closed end. Those are required to be defined as part of the first pouch of the elongated tubular portion. That's in the claim. And then they've left what they say are the valleys in between the second pouches. So here they have cut out the second pouches, they say. Or they call them spirals.
Well, if you look at the drawings in patent and suit, isn't the second pouch tubular?
Some of them are tubular. Some of them are bulges in the side. So, for example, in the I've given you two examples in this packet of materials. The first one in this packet is figs 4 to 6. That has a fully circular, annular second pouch. On the next page is a second pouch, and this is figs 1 to 3, there's a second pouch that is a bump, it's a bulge that extends out to one side of the condom. Figure 10, Your Honor, if you refer to the full patent, which of course is at the end of the blue brief, if you look at the figures, figure 10 is on the last sheet of figures, and it has a larger second pouch that extends all the way around the condom. And in none of, well, I take that back. In several of these preferred embodiments and in my client's product, it is impossible to remove the second pouch and still find a circumference of membrane that goes all the way around a cross-section that goes through the second pouch. In fact, what they're insisting on is an impossibility. It's a contradiction within the claims. because the second pouch is defined by the claim to extend outwardly of the first pouch. So, of course, if you remove the second pouch and you look at what's remaining, you're not going to be able to find a circular circumference of material at that cross-section. That's completely contrary to the claim, and that's claim construction. It was reconstruction that the commission did in its second opinion, and it was erroneous.
Now, Mr. Bean, you're well into your rebuttal time. We'll restore your full 3 minutes.
Thank you, sir.
While we hear from the commission and the intervener at this point. Mr. Reese. And you have 8 minutes, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Picking up where Mr. Beam left off, I think this is exactly the problem we have with this case. If you look at 4820 and 4824, and there are actually 2 points I'd like to make if I have the time. The first is that it's not simply the entrance limitation that's lacking here. It's also the movement limitation. It's a point that isn't captured by Mr. Beam, but it creates a separate and significant problem. And in a nutshell, that is that in this condom, the entire distal end of the condom is moving. It's folding. It's freely folding. It doesn't meet the claim limitation of the movement limitation. I can address that first, or I can address that after the...
Which part of claim one are you referring to?
I'm actually referring to in the patent, it's the movement limitation that refers to the back and forth movement and in and out that appears in all claims. And this is the limitation in claim one.
Line 30, column 7.
Exactly, Your Honor. This is the having an inner surface movable through said entrance and against the glans penis for movement back and forth thereon. And that's the point on the movement limitation.
The accused device meets that limitation but also supplies additional movement, right?
Well, that's just it. No, it does, Your Honor, I would submit that it doesn't meet that limitation. And that limitation is very particularized.
Well, the entire condom can be sliding back and forth across the penis during the coitus. It would seem to me that it's going to meet the limitation of the claim, but it's going to have additional movement above and beyond the movement.
Well, the movement actually claimed is not the movement that takes place in the condom. The movement that's claimed is this particularized movement where the pouch inverts radially and then moves back and forth. And it's not this, not the entire end of the condom collapsing, folding on itself.
But you definitely understand my point. I mean, if the claim limitation called for stretching the lower back, right? And some accused device not only scratch your lower back, but scratch your shoulders too. As long as it scratches your lower back, it doesn't matter. The fact that it does more than the claim requires is not perfect.
But it's actually the manner, Your Honor, I'd submit, it's the manner in which it performs the stimulation function. This is actually an inventive concept of the 004 patent.
This is all talk evidence, right? I mean, there wasn't any, movies of these things in use, right?
Others talk, there were physical exhibits, there were some demonstrations, demonstrations on this point as well.
Was it your argument, just to pick up on Judge Cutler's question, that the movement, that whatever movement there is in the accused devices, I think, or the two accused condoms, it is not the kind of movement, there is none of the movement that is required under the claims. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly, Your Honor. And it's also not through an entrance. So it's these two-part problems. You don't have the movement in any event. And we've cited, and the opinion cites, the variety of evidence on that point, including the testimony of Dr. Potter, who has significant experience in the design operation conducts, as well as Dr. Reddy, who's the inventor of the patent. And PTI would ask you to reweigh that evidence and make and credit its witnesses over all others. I submit those are quintessential fact-finding functions. So there's a problem with the movement limitation, and there's also this additional failure to meet the entrance limitation. And I think you've heard Mr. Beam.
The limitation proceeds from the notion that there has to be a defined boundary between the first pouch and the second pouch?
Exactly, Your Honor. Exactly. There has to be first pouch material, which is sort of your conventional shaped condom, perform the function of an ordinary traditional condom. Then there's a second pouch on top of that. And the definition that all parties agreed to was the boundary between the first pouch and the second pouch. And and PTI's whole theory of the case was that the movement that took place here took place through these valleys in the Twisted Pleasure and tendril in the Inspiral, thus placing the particularized movement through an entrance in that baggy end of the condom. And it was their theory of the case that even brought this whole issue into being about, well, if you're claiming that you're going through first pouch and second pouch material, where is the first pouch material? And the commission looked at this. The ALJ originally, Your Honors, had a theory of theoretical lines. We didn't have these the first go-around. It was literally theoretical lines, he said, created the tubular pouch, sort of an imaginary tubular pouch that continues underneath. Commission remands it, rejects that, and what does it get back? It gets back this new theory. Oh no, there are these thin wisps that now constitute this tubular portion. Counsel's suggesting that the wisps in 4820 and 4824 are the same as the elongated tubular portion you see below it. And
I
submit.
But I have a regular exhibit, counsel pointing to A4820 and A4824. You just in case
anybody
listens to the tape in this argument.
Oh, yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
I'm sorry, I meant to.
Whose exhibits are those?
These exhibits. These are, you're absolutely right, Your Honor. And there was some debate below about if you're placing the entrance, as PTI did, it was the sole theory of the case, if you're placing it within the spiral region, well, what exactly is the shape or size of that entrance? And the testimony the commission found and credited was the testimony of Dr. Potter with his experience and background in this area, who testified that, first of all, the entire structure, if you will, above on 4820, above the tubular portion and to the tip, his testimony was that whole thing was the bulgy end. That was the second pouch. He said, but if you really have to, as PTI insists, try to cut it away and create some theoretical specialized movement through an entrance, what you would get, if you have to cut it away, under their best case, is this material. This is the low point of those spirals. And so this is what the commission was looking at. It credited that testimony. I think that was a reasonable judgment. There's evidence in the record on that, and I cited it in the brief. It credited that testimony. And it found that under no, it even says in the opinion, we've now replaced theoretical construct with thin wisps. We're still in the land of the imaginary. The commission didn't see any tubular portion in this part. And fundamentally, and that's what it found, that there was no tubular portion in this area. So it wasn't inventing valleys. I'm sorry, Your Honor?
The tubular idea comes from a constant diameter notion.
Yes.
Right.
Yep.
If you look at the Pleasure Plus, which is in the package here, it's page 4743, figure Q, it's just one or two right in front of what you were talking to us earlier about. My understanding is that it's agreed by the parties that the plaintiff's premise embodies the 04 patent. Is that right?
That's
the commercial.
And if everybody agrees that that embodies the 04 patent, right? So the 04 patent reads on this on the pleasure plus. That's what I thought everybody agreed to.
Not exactly. I don't want to be disagreeable. But that actually was ultimately not litigated before the commission. But I'm following you.
Yeah, when I read what's in the briefs, I understand people to say, well, if you want to really know something that would be an accused device under the patent, you go look at the Blazer Plus. And I look at it, and I don't see a tubular portion that's generally constant, you know, from one end to the other.
And I'll use that to illustrate the point, although obviously we're not in...
Well, the point would be if the Blazer Plus reads on the patent and it doesn't have a tubular portion that's generally constant from the open end to the closed end, then why would you require the same of the accused device that somebody else made?
The commission recognized that a number of the preferred embodiments identify a tubular pouch with gaps between the tubes. And in fact, you'll see it in the patent, figure one, for example. In fact, all the figures. But figure one in particular, figures six in the patent is a good example, where you have pouch material, and between that you have tubular portion. And the pouch material that you see, if you use whichever Your Honor's wishes, with multiple pouches, the material, there's material, the commission didn't require that there's a full continuity throughout the condo of a circumference or a diameter. But where there's tubular portion, the commission examined it closely for circumference, for diameter, for what's the nature of the structure, is it performing what the tubular function is supposed to be performing, and didn't find that. But here, I'd submit, Your Honor, that there's substantial...
You're saying, Mike, there's, in the finding of non-infringement, nothing like a circumference in the valleys of the spiral region of the accused product. If you look at the Blazer Plus, there's nothing like a circumference in the second pouch. Right?
In the Well, actually, we're comparing it to the commercial product here, but I'd submit that the material you see, this is 4742, that's not in blue. This material, I would submit, Your Honors, and it's a question of degree. At some level, it's a question of degree. This material is wholly different from the material you see at 4820. That's the material there. That's the difference, Your Honor. The material is a continuation of the tube. There is an opening.
What I'm trying to get at is that it looked to me like, I think an argument could be made that the commission was looking at the patent to say, well, what the patent is really covering is, if you imagine a hot dog, and then you put a ring around the end of the hot dog, so that you go entirely around the circumference of the hot dog with a second pouch, if you will.
Yes.
Now, and we all know that the claim isn't limited to that, right?
Right.
The claim can read on a hot dog that's got just a bulge on one side, not a complete ring around the end of it. And what I was trying to get at is, it looks to me like the Blazer Plus is exactly that. It's hot dog with a bulge on the side. And so there's no circumference in the bulge. And so I was wondering whether it was right, as a matter of fact, to find that the two accused products don't infringe because they don't include something that the Blazer Plus doesn't include. That's
I understand, Your Honor. And I would submit that the material that you're looking at, and this is exactly what the commission was considering, and as I said, it's a question of degree. You're looking for, is there a diameter or not? Is there? Remember, there are some of these embodiments for which there'll be no tubular portion, where it'll be an annular pouch. And there's no tubular portion in that region. The commission recognized that. In those instances, you've got tubular portion that continues to the annular pouch, stops completely, no circumference, no diameter of tubular portion, your second pouch material, and then a resumption of the tubular portion. And the commission recognized that there could be variances in it.
Presumably not a frame because there's not a first pouch.
No, that's actually claimed. Those are some of the embodiments. That's figure four. And the commission said that all the embodiments were claimed. And its construction of the claim terms was made with that very much in mind.
Figure four is a high volume derailment, right?
That's right. Right, the notion there being that the ring is the second pouch. The tubular portion continues to the second pouch, and then it stops, and then it continues to the end of the condom. So I'd submit, Your Honors, that
I think, you've used about 7.5 minutes in addition to your regular time. So that was, you had questions. That leaves Mr. Schaub is about trying to figure things out here in about 3 minutes.
I'm sorry.
Do you have anything to add, Mr. Curley? You had questions. We were keeping low podium. Do you have anything to add?
Yes, I do, Your Honor. There are two claim limitations that are missing from the accused devices, one structural, one functional. On the functional, I'd like to respond first to Judge Clevenger's question. The commission correctly noted that in the 004 patent, the functional limitations are identified as differentiating the invention from the prior art. This appears at page 9 of the appendix. The patent office cited prior art, including Haynes, in which one or more pouches had already been superimposed upon a primary pouch, and that art is distinguished as failing to provide enhanced sensation through stimulating targeted regions that are sensitive. And the rejection of the two Haynes references in the file wrapper was overcome by arguing that the Haynes 903 doesn't teach the idea of a pouch having an inner wall that would penetrate through an entrance to stroke a penis, and as a result, the claim was amended to put in this movement limitation. And the commission noted in footnote 4 that all the independent claims have the same language, and that this language was added to induce the issuance of the patent. Now, what this is targeted stimulation, and it's a feature of every claim, and it requires a movement radially inwards and back and forth within the confines of an entrance. And this is where it differs from what Judge Clevenger was talking about. PTI's own expert, Dr. Wolf, he testified at pages 433 and 434 of the transcript, that's at 1694 of the appendix, that the principal difference between the invention claimed in the 004 patent and the prior art is that the second pouch is designed to stay in the vicinity of the most sensitive part of the penis and provide localized stimulation. The commission found, as a matter of fact, that the twisted pleasure does not practice the patented movement because the entire far end of the twisted pleasure wrinkles, folds, and moves freely over the entire distal shaft and head. And to respond to Judge Clevenger's question, the point is that the patented invention is targeted stimulation. The first pouch is essentially the old condom. And the old condom grips so that it doesn't dislodge.
It's not just targeted, but it's targeted to stay on the target.
Exactly.
That's what your point is. If it were just targeted, and then I would come back to you and say, well, if the claim requires me, the arrow has to hit the target, so long as one arrow hits the target, it can miss. Isn't that different?
I completely agree with that, but I think the claim requires something different. It requires the first pouch to hold the condom so it doesn't dislodge. So it's holding the condom. The first part of the pouch is holding the second pouch that's a wider diameter over this targeted region. It's not.
Well, how does the pleasure plus get that condom? I can understand how, as you've got the hot dog, you put a ring of rubber band around it, you you get that targeted
sure.
figure of movement effect and have it locked there. What happens in the Pleasure Plus?
In the Pleasure Plus, it's like figure one of the patent. What happens is all this is stationary. All the white part is stationary, and the blue part is moving in and then back and forth. So the only part that's moving is the blue part. All the white part is stationary. So that's what the whole idea of the invention is. You've got a first tubular portion that closely fits the penis, and then the second pouch is the loose part that rubs. So the first pouch is not moving to stimulate, it's the second pouch that's moving to stimulate. And that's another reason why the valleys are very plainly not part of the first pouch. If I could take the court back to figure K, this is not evidence of infringement, this is evidence of non-infringement.
Sure.
Which
one is it?
Figure K is 4738. Okay. This is PTI's demonstrative exhibit. If you take a look at this dotted line here showing the generally constant diameter that defines the first pouch, mm-hmm. they're saying that this valley, which is clear and not colored, is part of the first pouch. But if you actually look at where the fabric is, it's all outside that dotted line. It's wider than the generally constant diameter. If you take a look up here to the left where you see clear fabric, it's to the left of the dotted line, and on the bottom right, it's to the right of the dotted line. If you take a look at the Pleasure Plus, the dotted line conforms quite closely. That's figure Q, 4742. The dotted line conforms quite closely to the first pouch. So that's why the Pleasure Plus practices the invention, because it does have a generally constant diameter, because the clear fabric conforms to the dotted line, and the colored blue fabric is all that moves. In figure K, all the fabric in the valley is moving, and that is another indication that it's not part of the first pouch, it's part of the second pouch.
I think, that's fine, thank you, Mr. Chung. We have your argument. And you'll have the bubble, Mr. B. Let's see. The other side, you had a total of 18 minutes on your initial argument. It looks like the other side has had, let's see, 18 plus 3 is 21. We'll give you 5 minutes for your rebuttal.
Thank you, sir. The limitations, the arguments that have been made by the intervener and by the commission do not appear in claim one. I would like to show you where in a claim they appear to be talking about, which is claim 18. And I refer you to the back of the blue brief. Not quite the last page, but it's the third of the last page. It's at A59. Claim 18 is in the right column. That's column 8, at the almost all the way at the bottom. And I will refer you, there are 4 subparagraphs. And I refer you to the third subparagraph, which states, portions of said tubular portion located between each of said second pouches. Those are the valleys that the interveners and the respondent have been talking about. And with regard to prohibiting motion, if any of Mr. Chalick's argument is relevant here, it's only to claim 18, because as this subparagraph continues, these portions, or what they call valleys, maintain the constant diameter throughout the length of the tubular portion to resist stretching of the tubular portion, to thereby maintain the shape of the second pouches. So when Mr. Shalek's talking about everything moves, maybe that's relevant to claim 18, but it is not relevant to claim 1 or any of the other claims that are asserted.
What about the targeted stimulation?
There's nothing about targeted stimulation in any of the claims. But
what about in the specification?
Your Honor, on Dr. Potter's cross-examination, he admitted that there is nothing about fixed or stationary or anything equivalent to that anywhere in the patent.
I thought thought that the file history and some of the specification indicated that the advancement over the prior art for the patent was that it could target a particularly sensitive area of the penis to guarantee that that's where you're going to have the movement for the stimulation.
The intervener has represented that the prosecution history, the arguments were made to prohibit movement. That's untrue. What is added in the prosecution history is the entrance. The novelty here that allowed this patent to issue is the fact that there is a second pouch. If you can picture it like this, you have your elongated tubular portion. That's the first pouch. And you have a second pouch that extends outwardly of it. That's what's shown in the figure on the very front of the patent, which is Fig 2. The inner surface...
What's the difference between the accused device and the devices in the prior art bag of condoms?
Your Honor, it's undisputed that those prior art devices do not have a second pouch at all. And if they do not have a second pouch, they cannot have a second pouch with an entrance. And they cannot, therefore, have a second pouch that moves through an entrance. Now, the intervener has argued that there's movement back and forth. And there is. The claim requires that. If there is also some movement back and forth in some of the prior art, that is not a basis for them to argue non-infringement. They vigorously contested validity, and they dropped that. That's not presented here on appeal. So that there might be some similarities between the claimed invention and the accused products and the prior art, of course that's true. They all have an elongated tubular portion. That's the nature of a condom. That's what the district court found in 1999.
Well, a comeback would be helpful to me at least if you could use a couple of minutes to convince me one way or the other. I still come back to the point that it strikes me that for you to win, you have to say that the ITC made erroneous factual findings. Because it seems to me that we're agreed that there has to be first pouch, a second pouch, there has to be an entrance that is defined by a border of some sort between the first and second pouch. The ITC looks at the accused devices and says, I don't see any defining line, I don't see any entrance. And if it's a fact question, then you've got to meet a substantial evidence standard, right?
Actually, Your Honor, I don't believe that the commission did say that it could not... Well, maybe they did say that they could not find a boundary between the first and the second.
Well, that's why I'm glad you raised that, because they didn't say that in exactly those words, but it struck me that for me to be able to put a rationale on why they decided the way they did, even in the light of the Blazer Plus, because in the Blazer Plus, you see a dividing line, you see a boundary. Because there's a clear boundary between the two shaft-like bearings and the side bolt. It struck me that the commission was looking for a border, a wall, something like that.
Well, as far as where the entrance is, that's shown in these figures. If you look at figure F, which is A4733, in spiral, on the left side, you see the second pouch. That's on the right side. On the left side, what lies underneath that second pouch is the entrance, and you can see where the boundary is. That's the boundary between the first pouch and the second pouch.
What color one are you looking at?
It's at A.
Oh, you're talking about, I have a figure of fire. Are you looking at the figure on the left or on the right?
Well, both. The figure on the right shows the second pouch. The figure on the left shows where the entrance is. In other words, it's the boundary. It's very clear. There has to be a boundary between the first pouch and the second pouch. Otherwise, there would be gaps. And it would be anathema in a condom to not have the first pouch and the second pouch meet. So the way it got on the wrong track was through a faulty premise. Their logic is attractive. But their premise is wrong. Their premise is that you have to have a tube in the area where the second pouch or second pouches exist. That's That's how they got to that there has to be a circumference in the valleys.
Don't all the drawings of the patent show a tube through the second pouch area?
They show an elongated tubular portion. Your Honor, I would submit to you that in this case...
Right, but I just don't know, in fairness, we have to construe the claims as, you know, interpreted to us through the writing and through the drawing.
Yes, sir.
And it looked to me like there was a tubular portion from front to end running entirely through the claimed conduit, regardless of where the pouch is.
There is an elongated tubular portion, but there's always a second pouch that extends out from that. So there's never a continuous tube.
Thank you, Mr. Bean. The case is submitted.